This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politrix.
Eta, welcome to another episode of Hashtag Politrix on Wow, What a Week. My name is Fresh. His name is Botsang Modimoami Muilwa. And together, we're with you for the next hour.
Yes, Brother Fresh, good morning. Good morning to the followers and the viewers.
Yes, sir. How's your week been?
My voice is not at its best.
I'm yes,
under very strong medication. My week has been fine until on Wednesday. I end up in the hospital on emergency due to my eye problem. But all has been stabilized.
So now all this time, you're all blind. Can't be very blind.
I think you're blind. I know, it's just scary, man. I've heard this before. I've got implants, actually.
Okay.
Quite a few.
So, a bionic man.
I don't know.
Steve Austin. Steve Austin. Demand fan style.
Demand fan style, yeah. Now, so it happens that when you have these implants, they dislocate when you're in accidents or something like that.
Okay.
It has happened before, and I had a feeling like the same thing has happened now. So I was rushed actually from the labor court to the hospital. My colleague is like, no, I'm taking you to the hospital. I was in severe pain.
Yeah.
But when I arrived there, my ophthalmologist, Dr. Tam, a very good ophthalmologist,
yes, sir,
said to me, well, good thing is that your lens are intact, both of them, but you've got eye gout. Now, never heard of that nonsense before. Arthritis of the eye or eye gout. I live with gout.
Yes, sir.
But arthritis of the eye or gout of the eye, I never knew that. Yeah.
Do you think it's possibly all the wine?
No. No. You guys want to blame
and
good
other
stuff.
Lifestyle choices.
There's no other lifestyle
Because I can't blame steak, because you're not a steak eater.
No, I'm not. But you know this thing of people saying gout is caused by steak and all that? It is actually not true. It's uric acid.
It's
the level of acid. The body can distribute the acid evenly in your body.
Sure.
My argument has been, if red meat causes gout, all cancers will be suffering from gout.
Even the lions would. lions would be walking with a limp.
Look, I think it makes a way. They call it you call it a lifestyle. They call it the rich man's disease.
Yeah.
Whiskey, steak, red wine, and all other stuff, but in excess.
Sure.
I think it's, the doctor says it's aging, it happens because I've got implants and blah, 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 but he's confident I'll be fine.
And that is this week's medical health check with Dr. Botsang Modimoami Muilwa. Now we're going to get into the politics of politics. Brother man, so on Wednesday, DJ Christos and Ralph Gum had a dance music summit. So basically it's a conference for DJs, producers, singers, people who want to get into the industry.
Okay.
But what I found interesting is that it was sponsored by the German embassy.
Okay.
And I had an opportunity to interview Ambassador Peschke. Ambassador Peschke. And he told me about how in Germany, they're very pro the arts, because I even spoke to him about how when lockdown happened, one of the first countries that literally unlocked billions of rands just for artists, was Germany.
Was Germany, yes, I recall that.
And I know you were once a cultural attaché, were you not?
No, I was actually an administrative attaché.
Okay.
But because the South African government does not have cultural attaché to diplomatic missions.
Okay.
I don't know the situation now. I've never heard of anybody being a cultural attaché. So what happens normally, some of the attaché or diplomats, whether they are from political or trade or the administrative part, they will be given the responsibilities of cultural affairs.
Ah, yes.
And be having a station there, actually, that's my exposure to cultural affairs and the music industry and the artist. Actually, coincidentally, speaking of Ralph Gum, I first saw him playing live in Germany.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I always tell people, it's so funny. I saw him and Miriam Makeba, first time in my life, in real life, in a foreign country. I never saw them, and people were a little bit surprised. But I think as a country, you know, we have grown and we're big culturally. You know, when you look at the cultural industry, we even have a whole ministry, you know, a department dedicated to cultural affairs, sports, and all those things. I think that the government should consider cultural ambassadors, and not only artists or activists of cultural issues, to go and say, for example, Tato or Ralph or Christos is our ambassador when they go to perform at events. But to have in countries that are very big in cultural affairs, to have representatives who will take care of such, you know, affairs. Germany, most of the European countries, especially Eastern Europe, are very big on cultural affairs. France is one of the, actually they call it the Europe capital of culture. And countries like Germany, you know, further Eastern countries of Europe, but again, you look at Latin America, you look at countries like Argentina and Brazil, it will be appropriate to have somebody designated at the embassy to look at, you know, cultural exchange programs, cultural affairs. There's big economy and big money in cultural affairs and activities in the world. So I think it's one of the things that we've been sleeping on. But if you look at how South African artists perform and get rewarded and recognized all over the world, it calls for us to have cultural diplomats.
You know, the first time I performed in Russia, in Moscow, it was a culture exchange. So the SA Embassy had, it was Moscow Week. And the SA Embassy was part of the festivities. So myself, Bongo Muffin, I think Ringo Madlingozi, I'm trying to remember who else. Yeah, did a concert in Moscow.
I think
we did a concert and then I played another two clubs.
Now, you see, those are some of the activities. That
and this is back in 2004. 2004 already.
No. I think it's, look, I saw it when I was stationed in Germany, how almost all the old South African artists. When Vusi Mahlasela, Mango Groove, there was a group called Kut. You know, they told me that the first time they brought Opa Leboko. Coincidentally, Opa brought me up. He was living there. And it was just a coincidence that I brought the group Kutu to Germany. And we kept them there. Actually, we even rotated them around the South African because we had five offices, Frankfurt, Bonn, Berlin, Munich, and Hamburg. But Bradon Laka, to this day, he still writes about the opportunities I created and I gave him to perform in Latin America. Because for me, it was about, it's a South Africa week or South Africa event or any or Freedom Day of South Africa. Why would we use local artists? And let's get our artists from home. But a lot of other South African missions were doing the same thing. But we also looked at tapping into new talent. You know, there was a jazz artist lady, Nina Mkize. She's a graduate in music. She's a composer, right, and a jazz artist. And the first time she played abroad, we brought her to the South African Embassy in Brazil to come and play there. So it creates an opportunity, actually, for young and upcoming artists, but also giving back to the old artists. Like I said, we have used the late Brian Hughes a lot, you know, the Semenya's family. We've used them a lot in affairs. But again, the world is changing fresh. You know, you can't always be in traditional old music. You need jazz, you need mbakanga, you need house.
You need pop.
You need pop, and you need to accommodate South African artists because they are diverse. But absolutely, I think it comes up to the Germans, and I'm glad they're giving you guys an opportunity. You just didn't invite me. I'm hearing about it in the politics platform. But how kind.
No, the next time I'll make sure you're invited.
Thanks, bro.
As an old friend of Germany.
I'm still friends with them.
In fact, speaking of the Germans, we might as well go to the stomping ground, Namibia. There was an election, and there's a brand new president, freshly minted, Mama Stella. Is Stella here?
No, man, I don't know if she's Stella. I know.
Well, President Ndaitwa.
Ndaitwa, yes.
Yeah.
Look, you know, somebody said to me on after the preliminary results were out of the election, somebody said to me, said, you know, you must start keeping tape of the things you nail. You must tell us who's your informers and all that. But look, we said it last week. The writing was on the wall for me. I put my head on the block that she's going to come out victorious. albeit 57%, sure. And the next rival, who was an independent candidate, got, I think, about 20%.
Yeah, but they're crying foul that the election was stolen.
Even to court, look, yeah. Fresh, you know, countries like Namibia, South Africa, and Botswana, they don't have an appetite for those. Courts are not going to reverse those things because of administrative skirmishes to say laptops were off. They were off, and people had to vote. They extended the vote for 3 days. The government will argue. They will say, we saw our wrongdoing. We didn't close. We gave people more time. We extended. You know, those
so
are
yes, you're frustrated, but we gave you more time.
Mitigating factors were put into place.
Sure.
That's one element. But also when you look at the margin, you can't take a dispute to court based on administrative issues, not that votes were rigged or what. The margin is too big. The presidential one, 57 and 20, is too big. Only on the parliamentary votes, SWAPO lost the votes. From the last time, they lost about 10 seats. They only secured, and I said it last week, if they win, they will be about 51-52%, and they got 51%.
True.
But the most important thing is, thumbs up to the Namibians, congratulations. The second female president in the continent currently after the Tanzanian president. So Africa has only two female presidents. I mean, you can see the continent is not moving. It's actually embarrassing. The very first head of state in Southern Africa, a female head of state, and she's also one of the liberation veterans, a stalwart of SWAPO.
I was going to say, you know, as much as I'm happy that a woman president is finally sitting in the SADC region,
Kimagriza,
you know what I mean? I mean, she's 72.
Exactly.
Well, and you know, a part of me feels like as Africans, at some stage, we need to realize that the older, Bomagriza, my comrade, often come with old ideas and old comradely habits.
And they've done their part.
They've done their part, man.
They fought for the liberation. They were in the trenches. They were in jail. They went. They suffered. It's okay. We appreciate that. We need to move to the next level of generation. Mm. And we don't have to drop to move from the 70s to the 30-something-year-olds or the 40s, like the French have a 40-year-old president. We can start 50s at least, drop a little bit. You know, people in their 50s.
No, even 40s.
Yes, even their 40s.
I'm looking at, for instance, President Boko's cabinet.
Yes. No, the cabinet is great there.
Minister of Youth is a 24-year-old woman.
No, but what do you need? You need a 24-year-old woman to talk to you. Yes.
How old is the Minister of Youth here?
No. I'm not going to say that. She's my ex-boss, and I must be very careful. and she may come back. So I've learned not to talk about ministers. But it's not their fault.
Yeah.
It's the president and the political parties deploying those people.
Sure.
But at least parties like Patriotic Alliance have come with young people. Mm. We have seen some young people in controversies. The EFF has always had young people. Mm. It's the liberation movement. That's where the problem is.
Sure. But congratulations, President Netumbo Nandi Nda-Itwa.
Netumbo, yes.
Speaking of serving at the pleasure of the president, our good friend, whom just the other day on our show lamented how she's always been moved from department to department to department.
Yes.
She's now moved again.
Again.
From human settlements.
I actually was feeling bad. Our show may have caused that. You see, we're becoming comfortable. Move. It's how ironic that it's two weeks ago, three, we spoke about how she never finished one term.
Mm.
I think it's the eighth ministry now. But guys, we are speaking about Minister Mamunu Kukubai.
Yes.
That we interviewed 3 weeks back, I think so.
Yeah, she's at Human Settlements. And yes. She was at Human Settlements. But that was like her fifth or sixth.
It was the sixth
ministry.
Yes. Ministry that she's occupying. Actually, I went to look at the list. I mean, from science and technology to tourism, human settlements. She has been almost everywhere.
Yeah.
And I even remember saying to her, she's extinguishing fire. Mm. She's been taken around to extinguish fire. But look, I just hope for the sake of Minister Mamunu Kukubai, the president of the GNU, which I don't think it will see its five-year term off. I doubt it fresh.
Yeah.
But I just hope she sits there. I know her capabilities, and she finishes the term. a cabinet, I don't even call it a reshuffle. That was not supposed to happen.
For me, it's not even about Minister Mamoloko Kubai. It's more about how Mr. President said, I'm applying my mind regarding Minister Nkadibeng.
Yes, yes.
You know, because she might or might not be VBS money tainted.
Yes.
But the fact that he's been quiet all along, then when he does apply his mind, he just does a reshuffle.
Yeah, it's not even fresh.
He moves her somewhere else.
Yes, I really.
What would you have done, okay, were you Mr. President?
First of all, I think President Ramaphosa, and I'm unapologetically saying this, he is actually undermining the intelligence of the nation.
Sure.
That's what I think. Because if you think a person is not fit, for whatever reason, to can be a member of the executive, why would you move that person from one portfolio to another? Somebody said to me, Botsa, is it not because of the importance of the portfolio as well as the fact that she may be facing criminal charges of corruption and maladministration and
money? Then she should not be in any department.
Then maybe she should not be in a ministry that is going to oversee the prosecution. I said, no. If you are not fit to hold an executive office, it's across the board. Are we saying human settlement does not deserve a squeaky clean minister? Are we saying human settlement is not important? When in my book, human settlement, it's at the heartbeat of social development in the country, providing people with decent housing. Or is that a heartbeat? If Minister Nkadimeng, within Nkadimeng Simelane, I'm still calling Nkadimeng, if Minister Simelane is found not to be fit to can occupy an executive position office, it should be executive across the board.
Okay.
Now, what has happened, I don't regard this as a cabinet reshuffle. I think what the president has done, after he had told people they must give him a chance to apply his mind on the report he had received, he comes back weeks or a month after and he puts a plaster on the wound. It's more cosmetic. What he has done is a cosmetic thing. There's a wound and you put a plaster on it, or there's a crack on the wall, because there is a crack. In this case, those in the opposition as well as the media have put so much pressure on President Ramaphosa that the cracks are showing of the GNU because of all these other deployments, and they want the head of mayor or minister Simelane. And I think the president didn't act properly, but also the men are fresh. To just issue as a statement, no media, no questions, and all those things.
At the very least,
address us.
Address the county.
Yes, you've been addressing us of all, everything, even less important things. Now you are changing a cabinet, and there's two changes, because there's something that also happened, and I'll get to that, what's my thinking about in another ministry.
Okay.
You are changing a cabinet that is, what, less than 6 months old? You are already changed. Why informs the president to do that? What is it? Is it because of Thembi Nkadimeng or Simelane? If it's because of her, why is she still in the cabinet? And what I'm saying has nothing to do with Ms. Simelane, the person. It has to do with Ms. Simelane, the minister in the cabinet.
Sure.
If she's been charged, no. She's been investigated. There's allegations in almost half of the cabinet of this country, or 90% of ANC leaders. So I will say, if there's allegations, you should step aside. What happened to their own rule that says you must be charged? Look at what happened to Zikoda. He stepped aside, then he gets charged for something else, then he steps aside again. Now the case has been thrown out. You know, the man, and I saw the former Speaker of Parliament during the course of the week trying to pull Azizi Kota as well, approaching the court to say the state does not have a case, she must be relieved. But the court said they are going to prepare. Now, going back to Mercy Melani, I think, Fresh, that the president is bending too much on the pressure from the Democratic Alliance as well as the right-wing organizations and parties. The Ministry of Justice, I was explaining to somebody last night, if Mamoloko Kubai, is it a promotion or not? Yes, it is a promotion. People probably don't know that government ministries have categories and levels.
Okay.
Even if they earn the same amount of money. For example, in a country like the US and the UK, the Secretary of State, which is the Minister of Foreign Affairs, is the highest ranking minister. In South Africa, our Minister of Home Affairs. That's why when the head of state and the deputy out of the country, the Minister of Home Affairs will act. It's the most senior cabinet position,
sure,
followed by defense, followed by justice. Mm. Then the others, you know, they've got those categories. In other countries, mainly it will be the military.
Okay.
Understand, that is the second in charge. So it's a very critical position that Mamoloko Kuba is ascending to, and Kadimeng has been moved to. Very critical. And now you are taking a minister that is tainted with corruption and exchanging monies, you know, unethically. You take that person to a ministry that is crowded and clouded with corruption. Mm-hmm. Human settlement has big problems. Not the
minister. They've got big budgets and big temptations.
Yes, big temptations, and not the minister, the ministry itself. The department, whether it's at provincial level, because provinces distribute houses. There's bigger, but there's mafias there. There's bribes, there's construction issues. Now you want to throw her into the deep end while she's having this dark cloud hanging, you know, above her head. And I think it's not fair. The second one is the one of the two deputy ministers that are relatively unknown, that he reshuffled, he swapped them between. And I can tell you what's going on there. It is this tension between the SACP and the ANC. It is the conduct and the tension between President Ramaphosa and Minister Gwede Mantashe. Mm. That tension, since after the election, the moving of some powers from him to create a new ministry and all that. What is happening? And remember, Gwede Mantashe has been at loggerheads with AUTA, with AfriForum, as well as with the DA.
Mm.
And I think the instruction comes from those sectors to have a deputy minister who will manage. They are trying to manage Gwede Mantashe. That is the move.
Okay.
That is what is happening there. There was nothing with those deputy ministers.
Mm.
The problem is somebody must watch Gwede Mantashe in that ministry. They are trying to handle him and to control him, especially after the SACP has mentioned
So the two deputy ministers that were swapped, yes, then, so it's in which departments?
It's, I think, I know that one, they brought one to Gwede's department. Is it energy?
Yeah.
And then I can't remember where does she come from.
It's mineral, I think, minerals and energy.
Minerals and energy is one, and then the other one came, they just swapped from the other one. So the things people were asking, why that one was happening, why are we having to go and look at the changes in the deputy in the ministry. But another thing also that is important, that somebody in the cabinet told me, or in the executive told me, how they've agreed to work under the GNU. Where a minister and a deputy minister comes from two separate political parties, it's not like they are deputizing, but it's not deputizing. They are actually almost equal except on rank and salary.
Okay.
So the division of work, this is what this person was explaining to me, that the division of work is so clear that they don't interfere on step on each other's toes. They work together. So normally deputy ministers will be ceremonial. And, you know, they'll be doing things ceremonially. They don't have, remember, they are not members of the executive. They're the deputy ministers. But in this instance, they play some pivotal roles, very important roles, that normally deputy ministers will not play, in order for them not to be seen as junior and not reporting to you know, the one of the other political parties.
Sure.
For example, people are undermining the role of a deputy minister, but deputy ministers normally they are in charge, like the deputy president, they're in charge of the department's business.
Okay.
So entities of government departments, they will normally report to the deputy minister.
Sure.
Or the deputy minister will be overseeing the entities of government departments.
Mm-hmm.
So they have an important role to play, even if they are not members of the executive. But with the GNU, or Government of National Unity, in place, they are also taking care of people from other political parties and in order to accommodate them. So that is the situation.
Sure.
But I still think there's something that I thought about when I came to the studio this morning.
Mm.
Do you remember when President Zuma reshuffled the late Minister of Finance, Pravin Gordhan?
Mm.
There were political parties and even NGOs that went to court.
Sure.
There's a court ruling in this country where the court had ordered President Zuma to explain to the nation the reasons,
the rationale,
the rationale,
yeah,
And you know, people do things and they never imagine that it will catch up with us. Now we want the reasons. We want the rationale. Yeah. President Ramaphosa must tell us as a nation what is the rationale behind him doing this sudden less than 6 months changes in his cabinet. It is his prerogative, yes, but it's our cabinet. We put them there and he must tell us what's the rationale. There's a court order on that and somebody must just go in and uplift it and say, we want the reason. He can't just send us a letter, three paragraphs, and tell us he has exercised his rights in terms of section what part of the constitution and to can change the government. Why? Why is he doing that? Is he not having confidence and he's swapping them around? He's not even moving anybody out. If Thembisa Melane, the minister, was sitting at home, we'll say he is acting because of the allegations that are looming.
Sure.
We'll even question that to say every time there's allegations, are you going to move your cabinet members?
Exactly.
Instead, we will question that. Anything that he does, we'll question him. It is our duty to can question if we don't see rationale in what he's doing. And I think that's what the president owes us.
Now, speaking of politics, today Ghana goes to the polls.
Yes, and you know the challenges there. Ghana has been faced with challenges from independence. The Black Star of Africa, the first country to can gain independence from the British and all that. But look, that this wave. What I'm seeing is this: and Namibia just survived this wave of changing in government, and fresh there. What do you call it? The inflation rate in Ghana, it's over 90%. They are relying on, what do you call it, on foreign aid. That's why their president has been, you know, going to the Americans and the British and begging so much. They are in so much debt that even for the next 15 to 20 years, Ghana will not be able to pay its foreign debt to the IMF and the World Bank.
Sure.
Now, what kind of leadership leads a country into such a debt? And a rich country like Ghana with gold, with cocoa, and many other, you know, natural resources that can sustain that country. The tax is very high. The inflation rate is extreme. The Ghanaians are literally choked in their country.
And you know when President Akufo-Addo, when he won back in, was it 2016?
Yes.
Many thought that things would get better. He'd been trying. He tried twice before he won his third attempt. Many thought that, okay, finally there's light at the end of the tunnel. But you look at Ghana right now, and all you ever read about or hear about is economic hardships.
It's hardship.
That people are living from literally hand to mouth. If there's anything to take from your hand to your mouth.
Yeah, but also, It shows that when the kind of leaders that we put in power in the continent.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy is a former ambassador. He's very educated. He has traveled very well. He was said to be a very good businessman who can take the country forward. He actually worsened the situation in Ghana. Almost everything. I was looking at some interviews on the BBC during the course of the week where people were talking that they even struggle to find grain and rice in the markets of a country that has been, like Zimbabwe was to SADC states, well, has been the bread basket of West Africa. And look at where Ghana is. But it shows that lack of leadership with a vision. You understand? You can't have leaders who go and borrow and borrow and borrow, and at the expense of the country economy not going, how are you going to pay back the debts when the economy of the country is not going? How are you going to pay the debts when you are not getting into international agreements or deals that will expand and open markets abroad for your products to be selling abroad? What is it been doing? What also, remember what I said 3 weeks back? I don't understand why do people, particularly Africans, have to wait for elections to change governments.
What must we do, sir?
These people mess up. In the first 6 months, you realize it's a mess. Go on the streets, shut the country down, tell them to leave. You understand? People must go on referendums. They must go. There are tools and options to exercise before you even shut down the streets. You approach the Supreme Court or the Constitutional Court. You go on referendums. You approach the National Assembly. The National Assembly is actually our entry point to can change the government. Any human being can write to the national speaker and say, we are not having confidence with this person. To those political parties, file a motion of no confidence in the president. Mm. Why wait for elections to remove people from power when you've got tools?
Yeah, but you speak as if most African countries operate the same way constitutionally that South Africa does. In these other countries, you're better off just
shut up. No, but Ghana, at least, there's been some level of democracy happening in there. And all those. Yeah, but in many countries, you just have, like, look at Zimbabwe. I mean, if somebody asks me what's going on in Zimbabwe, there's no democracy there.
Yeah.
It's dictatorship. It's like more of a military government. Mm. And I think in those countries, but others like Ghana, Kenya, I mean, you can mention a few countries. People may say Rwanda is not part of that. But you can mention a few countries where democracy works.
And you know, when they discovered oil fields in Ghana in 2019, you would have thought that now that there's these new revenues coming in, that things would ease up.
Would ease up. It's getting worse.
We're here. Yeah. And chances are the young people of Ghana are going to make a decision this weekend that says we need someone else.
Exactly. No, I think they will. But remember, they've also been unhappy with quite a number of things he has done in the last 1 year.
Yeah.
Remember those trips to the UK and the US, and the worst is the position that Ghana took with Nigeria against the coup belt countries, Niger, Chad, and Burkina Faso. The Ghanaian people were not happy with that because the youth were like, you are risking our country. Mm. We are a peaceful country. Don't get involved in trying to put sanctions and fighting our neighbors, you know, on the north. And I think they are not happy. But you see, you mess up with youth, they will remove out of power.
Yeah.
And the youth stand up and they go on the streets. They get irritated. They are not going to wait for debates and negotiations and parliament because youth want to see the results. They want to see the results immediately. You saw what happened in Taiwan. I mean, one of the most supposed to be peaceful countries on earth. Mm. Youth have brought the government down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Viva the youth. Viva. Sometimes that's the only way it's going to happen. Eh?
For me, it's the only way. And if we are not careful in South Africa, I keep on repeating this.
Sure.
It will go. When you sit with a country that almost over 40% of the youth is unemployed, some are educated, you are looking for trouble.
Absolutely. Let's move to the ANC in KZN. There's been a lot of mutterings this week. Mm-hmm. There's also the ANC and the SACP. What are your thoughts on all of this shenanigans?
With the KZN, it has been looming. Remember, the NEC of the ANC had gone through a process of reviewing their performance during the last national elections. Mm. The NEC went through that, you know, self-introspection kind of a thing. Now, one of the resolutions that they came out with there was to also look at what could have happened in the KZN because they lost KZN. And they put the blame on Mkhonto, the arrival of Mkhonto as a party. And then in Gauteng as well, I don't know what they blame Gauteng on, but MKP also took votes from them in Gauteng. So the NEC of the ANC had given members of the National Working Committee, selected members of the National Working Committee, to go and visit KwaZulu-Natal and engage the provincial leadership there, of which the Secretary General of the provincial ANC leadership.
Mm.
He came gun blazing. He didn't mince words. You know that even President Ramaphosa has actually given an instruction that his statement, that it was his official speech in the response of the NWC visiting, it must actually be removed from the ANC website.
Yeah.
Because one, he was saying, if anybody wants to say KZN has failed because of controversy and they were beaten hands down. But even the president and Fikile Mbalula, they must also look at their performance because they lost, you know, elections nationally and the Gauteng as well. But I've heard Fikile Mbalula, the Secretary General of the ANC, you know, talking very strong words, like if the NWC is going to recommend that they should reshuffle or move those people around, disband them.
Or even disband the whole thing,
disband
yes.
Disband the whole thing. And he's talking more towards that. In my view, I think the ANC is making a big mistake. Mm. I don't think it was about the bad performance of that leadership. You can't put a blind eye that Jacob Zuma arrived with some controversies in KwaZulu-Natal that people thought it's a Zulu party, its stronghold in KZN. I mean, those are the dynamics of politics. I think it will worsen the situation of the ANC. This is my view in KZN. Mm. I think disbanding that provincial committee will worsen the situation. You will see more of its leaders moving to controversies your party as well as the Inkatha Freedom Party.
Yeah, but the ANC has said, though, that those that want to leave are free to leave. They must leave now.
You know, the ANC is bleeding. They are wounded. And they continue with this arrogance that is not helping them. Mm. When you lose leaders, leaders go with followers. And that's something that you can't undermine when you are bleeding, when you are an organization that is trying to reinvent itself. You still want to hoard and keep people who have been accused of corruption and maladministration, the people you are supposed to be getting rid of. Mm. Now you take people because of performance that you are supposed to do, or to coach, to counsel, and to give support for better performance. You want to disband them. Mm. I don't think it's a good idea. And I wonder what is the feeling of the ANC members in there. But then to add, I want to see what they're going to do in Gauteng. Gauteng is a very different ball game. And if they want to disband KZN, KZN will lament and say, you must disband Gauteng as well. Mm. And both may say, even National must disband. Maybe the ANC must disband on its own and close books. But there's another element. They are long-standing, you know, former think tank of the ANC, South African Communist Party, has finally, after years of threats, decided they are going to contest elections. So we know that the next...
So basically, they're not going to get a seat then, is what they're saying.
What do you mean? What makes you think they're not going to get a seat?
Do you think they're going to get a seat?
People are very upset with the African National Congress. And if you look at how things have been going with Solima Paila exposing the true agreements of the GNU and the fact that this GNU did not happen only because of the loss, it may have been engineered years back to say South Africa must go to that direction. There's a lot of people in the ANC who are very upset, who are saying, I'm not going to go and join in controversies of Jacob Zuma. I would rather stay in the ANC or abstain from voting. Mm. And that's where the South African Communist Party will tap, especially at local. I don't know how to talk about national, because the next elections are local government elections. And the SACP is claiming to be, at the hardcore beat of the poor of the poorest, which is national. And I think they will get some seats in municipalities. I think they will.
Ah, okay, but not in the National Assembly.
Now, it's too early to predict that at the moment. Let's go into local elections and see how they perform and what they deliver in those seats that they will get. And then it may give a picture. But again, I've got a conspiracy theory on that. Let me tell you what may also be happening. ANC people are not stupid. They are very smart. They may have realized that they are going to lose their members who are hardcore members, who are angry and what. Remember, they had a meeting with SACP a week before this decision of SACP. Immediately a week after their meeting, the SACP announced that they are going to contest local government elections. My thinking is they may have agreed to say, let us split to contest, so that those people that are upset with the ANC of Ramaphosa in inverted commas, let us not lose them to other parties.
Let's give them a place to go rest.
Let's give them
a place to wait.
Yes, and because there's nothing that makes the SACP not to work with the ANC. You understand? The ANC, the SACP will then, after pull a Jacob Zuma and MKP thing, and say, we are here, let's work together. These are the conditions that we are having. They will do that. They will say, we'll go into a local government together, but we don't want the Democratic Alliance go with us, like they've done in the provinces. I think it's the strategy not to lose angry, hardcore members who are said to be communist or leftists in the ANC. They must not lose them to anybody else but to the SACP. That's my thinking. In observation, because why would this happen a week after they've had a meeting, then they comfortably announce this?
Do you think, do you believe they have enough of a constituency, though?
They don't at the moment. Remember the constituency of what they call the tripartite alliance, SACP, COSATU, and then you add others like, what do you call it, the SANCO and all that.
Yes.
It has been based in a whole program, everybody inside the same pot. You understand? At a moment, I don't think they would have, but because of the happenings, you know, if they would have tried to do this 5 years back, I would have said they don't have a constituency. But because of the happenings in the country and within the ANC, they may benefit from that.
Absolutely.
So one man's poison is another man's bread.
Mm.
And I think they will benefit from that.
Speaking of poison and bread, let's cross the Atlantic.
Yes.
There's a lot happening.
Where are
in
you
America.
Going?
In America.
Oh.
President Joe Biden said he would never give his son the presidential pardon. He's gone ahead and done it shamelessly.
Yeah.
Trump is busy making threats to BRICS. He's also appointed an Indian immigrant as a head of the FBI.
Yes,
there's a lot happening in America.
Yeah, but President Biden, I think he came to his late senses in the last minute. I don't know what is he trying to do with this whole thing, because legally, it's so obvious because he has said it no over five times, Fresh. He has said no, and he didn't say, I don't want to get involved, I'm not interested. He said, no, I will not interfere, and I'm not going to pardon him. But I think he's taking chances. I don't think he will get away with this. I saw one report from a judge of the High Court in the U.S. saying President Trump must act now, he doesn't have to wait the 20th of January to can deal with this. There's a legal hole to can do that. But again, I don't understand how is President Biden thinking he can save the son on a pardon before the final conviction. And it's not only for tax. That's another difficult part. That's not only for tax. There was a charge of arrest for an illegal or unlicensed firearm.
There's firearm, there's drugs.
There's drugs. You understand? Yeah. You know, if it was for drugs, he would stand up and say they were harassing my son because he's the son of the president. But the drugs and the firearm, and the drugs, I don't know whether the drugs that were found him possessed, whether it was for consumption or for distribution. You understand? Those are some of the things that one, those are criminal activities.
That's why it doesn't make sense for him to say it was just a political witch hunt.
No, it's not a political witch hunt. Which drugs I may use that the politicians like to do, they use tax authorities to can hunt each other. I mean, we've seen it in South Africa. But with drugs and firearm, what is a political hunt when my son is being caught with a firearm, an unlicensed firearm?
Did or did he not have an unlicensed firearm on his person?
Exactly. You understand? And
was
drugs.
He or was he not caught with drugs?
With drugs. And that's
so why would you pardon such a person?
Exactly. So I don't think President Biden's son will get away with this.
And is it allowed to for Trump to come in and turn over a pardon?
Well, I think they will. Look, I don't think... like I said, I don't think the cases were all, he was convicted already on all. I don't think the cases were all, I must get my facts clear on that. But what I'm saying is, by the time this process happened, we are left with what? Or just above a month, 5 weeks for Trump to resume office, maybe 6 weeks for Trump to resume office. This thing will still be fresh from the oven. And he will interfere with that. I mean, he can come in and reverse those decisions. Again, there are legal challenges where the judiciary in the U.S. can delay or this process to be implemented. And I think Trump must use his influence and those that he's going to appoint who are already in the system to can derail or delay this process. If I was in Trump's position, I will do that. But yeah, that's Biden's doing what they call the last kick of a dying horse or donkey. That's what he's trying to do. Now, President Trump comes as well. I've got a completely different view from that he's threatening BRICS. Fresh, Donald Trump is the president of the United States of America. His priority as a patriot is America. Everything has to do with America, its security, its dollar, and whatever. The rest will come after.
Yeah.
That's what a head of state would naturally do.
But would you not do it diplomatically versus just recklessly treating the mighty dollar? If you mess with it, you guys will pay 100% tariffs.
Oh, what's wrong with that? That's the language that America has been using in dominating the world.
But what I'm saying, though, is time, place, and the how.
They matter.
There's a reason why you have diplomacy.
Yes. But
and maybe to a certain extent, your phone should be given to you once in a while. and your posts must be curated. Versus you're just allowed free rein at 2 in the morning.
Yeah, I saw a report from the SABC correspondent in the US.
Yeah.
Something Bruce, his name is Bruce.
Okay.
He's the SABC person in the US. He's been there for many years. He wrote something very interesting on his social media post. He says normally...
Not Chairman Bryce Peace or something.
Bryce Peace, yes. He said normally during this era, this phase, there will be a lot of fake news and outgoing CIA and all that issuing statements as if it's Donald Trump.
Yeah.
But Donald Trump at the moment is not to say he's not allowed to can say anything, but naturally they will be quiet in this era. Mm-hmm. The only difference is Trump hasn't come out and said, I've been hacked or it's not me. He's quiet about the whole thing. Mm-hmm. That's one element. But also, Fresh, I think he is trying to assert himself to the American people that have brought him back into power to say, I promised you things during the campaign.
I'm going to deliver.
And I'm still saying it after I've won the elections. And I'm telling you that's what I am going to do. Mm. Now this is what I said, playing the devil's advocate. It is now the tennis ball. It's on the side of the court of those that he threatens to stand up and show some spine. You understand? Let them stand up. The president of these BRICS countries, including our own, let them stand up and say to Donald Trump, you cannot dictate to us who to trade with and how to trade with. You can't. Mm-hmm. Despite the threat of AGOA, that he will shut AGOA down and all those things. My brother, the world is an oyster and the cake is big.
Mm-hmm.
South Africa can take its wine to China and anywhere. And again, I've said 2 weeks ago here that India has toppled Saudi Arabia as the largest supplier of oil to Europe. And India doesn't have that oil. Mm-hmm. It's oil from Russia. So there's always ways out. But again, politically and economically, Trump must be very careful because the dollar on its own has started to be losing respect.
Mm-hmm.
And people were like, this dollar is overrated. Why didn't Trump threaten Europe when they went into the euro?
Yeah, but he wasn't there. He found it there.
Yeah, but he's trading with Europe, and they're trading amongst each other. The euro member states have a currency called euro.
But he found it there operational already.
Yeah, but why is he not saying trade with the dollar? He can change. He can tell them trade with the dollar.
Because he knows he can't afford to upset the status quo, but he can afford to decide what is going to be the new status quo.
Yeah, but why should he want to upset the why does he think Russia, China, India, Brazil, plus and South Africa, they don't want to do something that will benefit them? Because these countries are saying the BRICS currency, if it comes, it will be amongst the BRICS member states. However, I've always said, if you trade with another country, you use the currency of, if we trade with the United States, America can say you will trade us with the dollar and the rent. America can say that, and they are in their right to say that, but they can't tell us that when we want to trade with India, Russia, or China, or Iran, or whoever, then we must use the dollar.
Or how to do it.
Or how to do it.
But also, though, if you think about it, you know, there's been talk about de-dollarization,
yes.
The BRICS summit, but I don't know that there's any way where BRICS have said we're going to de-dollarize.
No, BRICS has never said that
it's
officially.
It's been in the media, it's been everywhere, it's been touted left, right, and center, but the BRICS position has never been we're going to de-dollarize.
No, BRICS position is very clear, and it's very proper to say we will trade amongst us with our own currencies.
Mm.
The second part is, once we are ready as a BRICS nation, we will have to create a currency that will trade us up. This de-dollarization has been created by the media and the panic of the U.S.
Yes.
It's the panic of the U.S. that says they cannot just push the dollar aside as if it's a non-entity.
Sure.
And it's created by that.
But South Africa's even denied it, though. I mean, after... Trump decided he's going to save a rattle. South Africa came out very, very fast.
Yeah,
very, very fast. I said, no, it's not like that. We never said we want to come up with an alternative currency.
But you see, we are the weakest link. I've said it. South Africa is the weakest link of BRICS. It's the most dangerous wing of weeks, followed by India.
Mm.
You understand? Remember,
do you think we buckled too fast?
Yes, yes. Why did we rush to respond and all that? There is a BRICS official position. Let BRICS answer, because he was attacking BRICS.
Yes.
And he didn't attack South Africa. He was attacking BRICS as a body. But again, another country that I think it will compromise faster after South Africa is India. And based on what? Based on their electronics. Their electronics' biggest market consumer is the USA. Mm. And we know how Modi and his cabinet are very soft when it comes to the United States of America. I mean, we have seen how the Indian government has also compromised when it comes to land occupation by the Chinese, the occupation of Tibet, and all those things. They've been quiet about the islands and areas that are still occupied by the British, the former colonizer. So it is not going to be, and anybody in BRICS who actually ever thought it was going to be a smooth ride towards a BRICS formation, BRICS growth, and BRICS currency.
Mm.
I did not expect it to be a smooth ride. It's going to take years, and it's going to be a very hard road to travel.
Mm.
Especially that this, remember, in BRICS itself, there are members of the United Nations Security Council.
Sure.
And I said, there are people in the BRICS who are members of the so-called G20. You understand? And then they threw in Africa there with South Africa, Chile, another disappointment with us. We know we shine with nonsense fresh. We go and we get excited that we are chairing G20, the world's most richest 20 countries. We are not there. They went and they put Africa as number 21, and they gave us South Africa as the usual puppet. Go and chair the 2024-2025 era of the G20. Well, we don't even call, none of these African countries qualify with the, when you look at the GDPs of those countries, which are members of the GDP, none of us qualify. Mm. But then we are members, we are what? And we come as a collective again, come boys and girls. Okay, there's two girls now, it's no longer
come, a girl. Come natives.
Yes, come natives. come and listen to adults talking. Sit on the table with us. And actually, you can even chair the meeting. We want to talk business and our wealth.
Yeah.
And you take your puppet South Africa to chair a meeting. Let me tell you, the colonization of the mind in Africa, it has a very long way to go. A very long way. If we are going to allow to be abused blatantly, because this is how the West and the rich countries are abusing Africa. First of all, they invite you. 50, the biggest, this continent is big. Even if in a map it looks small. 52 or 53 or 54 countries, if you call others that are still being occupied, and say, come talk to us, 54 of you. Come and talk to us as a group. Don't come one by one. What nonsense is that?
Mm.
I mean, Europe can fit. You can take the whole of Europe. It will fit 3-4 times into Mother Africa.
Mm.
And they go there as individuals. Even poor states, of Europe. Portugal was at some stage regarded as the poorest state of Western Europe. No, they're still treated with decency. Even better than African countries combined.
Mm.
And our African leaders, they bow to that.
Sure.
And people are like, yeah, but they'll punish you with sanctions. They will not give you loans. They will withdraw AGOA. You are abused. Mm. You have been given loans on top of abuse, and you still want to say, can I get more? That's why Ghana is where it is today.
Mm.
It's loans. It's AGOA.
So what must happen?
Fresh, we need to decolonize the continent.
Mm.
We need to have leaders who can stand up against the white puppet masters. You understand? We need to stand up and have leaders who say, it's okay, because we can feed ourselves. We can feed ourselves.
Mm.
If African countries with their wealth can just reclaim their wealth back, and meaning the land back because the land is still in the hands of the former colonial masters, the De Beers and the Anglo Gold and Ashantis, all those. The land is still in them. If we take this wealth and we tell these people, like the Boers have done in the Sahara. Understand? Those boys have taken their wealth and they have survived. They're under sanctions. Burkina Faso is under sanctions. It's almost 2 years now that since President Captain Traoré took over, they are leaving, they're exporting, they're feeding themselves.
Yeah.
The country is building their economy without France.
And it won't be easy, it won't be a smooth journey. No. But until it starts,
we have to
nothing
start
changes
somewhere.
Yes, if nothing changes.
Yes, we have to start somewhere in order to get to a certain point. Mm. And if we don't stand up, what will we lose? Somebody was asking me, but what's up? Our goods will not go into the American market. Your wine, the Americans won't buy you. I'm like, whose wine? Whose wine? It is still the Americans and the British former settlers sitting in Stellenbosch and Cape Town who owns those mines and the wine farms. It is not the majority of the African people that benefit from this trade. We don't benefit directly from this trade. They will tell us the rent will drop, the markets.
But they're hiring people, you must.
Yeah, and that's my other problem, to say there will be job losses. There will be job losses. Are they saying if the imperialists or foreigners leave our land and our mines and leave, we will be unable to have entrepreneurs as Africans who will continue with the business? Who said we are incapable of running businesses or manufacturing or industries on our own without the aid of foreign countries? Who said we can't mine? The Zamazamas are showing us. Zamazamas are actually a classical example that given a fair chance, what we are capable of doing, they're doing it even under hardship, without equipment, without rules and regulations. Imagine when there's equipment, there's support, there's rules and regulations, there's a government that will support its people. I mean, people must not create an impression that before colonialism and the so-called foreign direct investors came to Africa and they are continuing to come now to recolonize us through the economy. It's an economic colonization element. They must not think like Africans were just sitting here waiting for a lion to pass and all that. I mean, did they think Africans did not have anything to do? They couldn't farm.
Yeah.
Exactly that. Huh? We built the pyramids.
What's that? We're out of time. I think let's wrap it up.
Okay.
Where do we find you on social media, sir?
Okay, botangm@gmail.com. And also on social media, it's @botangm on all social media handles.
Mm-hmm.
And then on WhatsApp, it's 082-485-9100. I must say thanks to the followers of the show. The books are flowing.
So the books are going?
They are going to as far as University of Venda to KZN.
That's amazing.
To Australia, and there's one of our biggest followers from, what is this country? Dominican Republic.
Oh, that is so dope.
She has ordered 5 books for family members.
Oh, nice.
Some are in France, here in the Dominican, and some are in the US, covering all the costs for that. So it has been good, and you know, the comments and the response of the people. I like it. I saw somebody saying, after watching #politics on Wawa, I don't watch news anymore. I wait for Fresh and Botak. They can cover what happened in the world
to sum it up.
Yes, brother.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, brother.
Thanks, my brother.
Yes, sir. And we are done. Another one in the bag. Thank you for liking, for subscribing, for sharing. Copy the link and send it to a family member or a political party member of yours that you feel needs to get the 9. The 411, not the 911. Although often, because of the 411, you have to call 911. On that note, we are out of here, coming to you from Rockets Media in Bryanston. Check them out, and it's an incredible studio. You might want to use it for your event or to record your podcast or your DJ mix. Rockets Media. We're part of the Africa Podcast Network. Email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Shout out to Pezulu Works for all of the cinematography and to our executive producer, Keletso Modisa King. Till next week, from Fresh and Bosang, have a wow week in spite of yourselves.